You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
And I don't mean like sitting up poly agreements like in front of our family being like, okay, as long as you like call me first, it's fine. Like we were not standing at our wedding ceremony
Do
and saying
you,
that.
Nicole, promise to call your husband and give him a heads up when you meet a hot Australian.
Exactly. No that, tongue kissing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about.
Dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, a podcast that is 10,000 crunches short of having Elliot Page's abs. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're dyking out with actor and podcaster Nicole Payson about relationship escalators.
Some quick announcements. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. For any of you who had trouble getting our episode on Lesbian Tastemakers with Diana Suhami, there was a glitch with Apple. They redid their system, and some people who listen to podcasts through Apple Podcasts didn't get the episode, but it is available on all other platforms. I'm not sure if they fixed it yet, but go there if you missed an episode. Rate us 5 stars, please. So we've mentioned that we're going to be hosting a show for the Lesbian Bar Project again. This one is going to be the premiere of their documentary that they made, and we got a sneak peek at it. It's great. It's about the dyke bars and the dyke bars disappearing. Leah Delaria is involved. And they're going to be screening it in New York. So there is an event Melody and I are hosting, and they're going to stream it either on Jägermeister's website or on the Lesbian Bar Project's Instagram. Look at our Instagram. We'll tell you where you can watch this. We're going to be moderating a panel as well. So check that out. It's really exciting stuff. We love our friends over at the Lesbian Bar Project, and they're doing such great and important work. And you learn so much in this documentary, and they really do a great job of putting the spotlight on the people that work so hard to keep this part of our culture going. Speaking of gay culture, our friends over at the Les Hangout podcast, I don't know how they did it, but they have another podcast that is coming out. It's a musical. They wrote a musical podcast. Yeah. So for anybody who has been craving a queer musical podcast, The Flame is coming out. And check that out and support them. They have worked so hard on it. I can't wait to listen. I love musicals, and it should be fun. They got some Broadway performers to star in it. And yeah, just want to give them a plug and a shout out and support that, because I know it's been a ton of work for them. We just recorded our Patreon off-topic episode of the week. Every week we are putting out an episode. Can you believe it? After years. of having a hodgepodge of things on Patreon. Now we're having a bunch of conversations, including what Melody did in Chicago,
what Carolyn did upstate,
what shows we're watching, like Hacks, and why maybe I don't like it.
And why maybe I do.
And how I almost ruined a gay wedding? I don't know. You'll have to listen.
Just a little catch up.
You'll be the judge. Yeah.
But you know what we didn't get to catch up on, Carolyn?
What?
What is the gayest thing you did this last week? We didn't touch on that.
Man, probably because I feel like I have a disappointing week of gayness to report. The week kind of flew by. We were treating our countertops, which I feel like I've said this 9 times before on the podcast, but this time we actually did it. And we had to be out of the house a lot because the fumes were killing our brain cells and also can harm your fertility chances. So we were hanging out in New Jersey and we went to an arboretum. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's like a botanical garden park of sorts, but it's all trees. And we spent a large chunk of the day walking around, and Cecilia and I climbed a tree together. There was a great tree for climbing.
That's so gay.
Nobody was there. There was a wedding that was going on, but it was a very small, small wedding. And not that many people were in this park. And this tree that you would think normally would have kids climbing all over it, instead, you had these adult dykes climbing up the tree and taking pictures of each other. Because it's been a while since we've had a little couples photo shoot and taking pictures of each other and hanging out in trees. So is that a stretch? Is that gay?
No, that's so gay.
I think it's gay.
I've actually seen a shirt once.
Where? Tell me more about these shirts, Melody Kamali.
Not any kind of shirt, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay. Okay. Get this. Short sleeves. Ringer. All white. Okay. Black lettering. You've never seen this black lettering, though. It said, "Be gay, climb trees."
Oh.
I'm not kidding. I don't know if it was at a thrift store or what. I don't even remember if it was Chicago or Brooklyn, but that like stuck in my head. I think it said, "Be gay, climb trees." Is that a thing?
You know,
it's probably a bumper sticker or something. I don't know.
Tree climbing should be something for the queer community alone. We've earned it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, well, Cecilia is out-gaying me every single week, and she talked to people. We had to get some work done in our yard and some drainage stuff put in. And she talked to people into building her a swing, a tree swing. And she's just been all week on the tree swing. And she's like, "I'm going to be out on the tree swing. Do you want to swing with me?" I'm like, "No, I got stuff to do." And she's enjoying her tree swing. And it feels very gay. But that's the gayest thing she did.
That's gay in the lighthearted and carefree definition.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Love it.
Yeah. How about you? You were in Chicago and I peeped your Instagram. I was being nosy. I was having FOMO. Mm-hmm. I was jealous, Melody. I was downright jealous of the fun time you were having in Chicago. I think I know what your gayest thing was, but why don't you tell everyone else?
I'm going to have to go with something you didn't actually see, Carolyn, because it was a covert gay operation.
What?
I know you're wanting me to say drag brunch, and don't get me wrong, that was the gayest thing I've done all year. That was the best day of 2021, hands down. Drag Me to the River, this drag brunch show, Sundays in Chicago at the River Kitchen and Bar, I believe it's called, in Lakeview. Holy shit. It's just, I haven't seen a drag show like it. I mean, granted, I haven't been to one in a long time, but people who go there regularly were like, "No, it's never this good." I mean, there were death drops from high elevations,
wow.
Dancing on the bar, splashing water over bodies, and just the best, like, scream singing music with your friends. You couldn't want anything more. It was gay jubilation, okay? I do have to say the gayest thing I did this last week, however, came at the end of the trip, the very end of the trip, on the plane back from Chicago. Allie and I were on two window seats. I was in the window seat right behind her. Now, on the way there, we realized if we ask people to switch seats with us, they will respect the request when you use the word wife, right? And that worked great on the way there. Allie's kind of getting a hang of it. When she says it, it sounds more like, excuse me, sir, do you mind changing seats with me so I can sit next to my wife? Like, it's like, you know? But on the way back, she finessed it a little better. She asked this very nice woman if she could switch with her. And this one was like, oh, yeah, you're like giving me a window seat. Perfect. And I'm so glad she switched because we found ourselves in the same row as a lesbian couple. Now, I can only describe what happened for the next hour and 50 minutes as competitive cuddling. Competitive signaling or whatever that was. It was weird. Like, Allie noticed they were gay. Because they had an iPad that was resting on each of their knees, and they were, like, cuddled in close, and they looked gay. They were, like, lacrosse lesbians, you know? They were, like, the kind of lesbians I grew up with, so I clocked them right away.
Were they watching Ammonite on the iPad? Was there...
It was a drama, okay. Which felt gay, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it seemed very serious. So for about an hour and 50 minutes when I wasn't competitively cuddling with my girlfriend and like sticking my hand in her crotch so they could see, I did have another hand shoved in my pocket, just like gripping our business cards, but I never did get the confidence up to do it. but like it was, one of those planes where it's two rows of two. Like, yeah. We could all see what was going on and no one acknowledged it. And then at a certain point, it got too late, but then we couldn't stop. And it was just gay flexing for the entire flight. And at the end of the flight, one of them made it off the plane before the other, and we were kind of sandwiched in between them. So one of them had to wait. And I was like, now's our chance. I still have my hands on these fucking cards. Just give it to her. We walked off. I paused right in front of one of them. We made eye contact, and then I like stuck my head down and sped walked away. Classic. Even that part's gay.
I mean, the competitive cuddling and signaling is definitely a Cecilia thing, that as soon as she sees another couple, she wants to signal immediately. And I can't help but think that straight people are missing out on this. You don't think they're ever like, hey, Barb, we got to let them know. We're also heterosexuals.
Ted, I think they might be straight. Because we were whispering and they were 2 feet from us. I know it's kind of louder on planes, but like they had to have known. Allie, as we know, is the Cecilia in the relationship. There's so many parallels. And yeah, Allie was the first to notice. And when she saw that they, out of necessity, had to be that close to balance this iPad and watch this show, I think she saw it as them like throwing the first punch in our competitive cuddling match. And I was like, no, they need to cuddle up close to watch this. Allie shoved her hand into my crotch. It's like such a big motion to get their attention. And then we started at an 8, you know, and only went up from there. But at a certain point, you know, the signaling has worked. Then what? It's like, it just felt ridiculous at a certain point.
Yeah, for that, see, when you're kind of in a captive audience situation, like passing by, sometimes I'll say something like, Rosie O'Donnell, like just as I'm walking by, just something to get it out there, just to acknowledge it.
Just but like Ricky Lake, maybe.
Oprah and Gail, Oprah, and look at us, a couple of Oprahs and Gails over here.
Speaking of hotels, we of course got the classic, it's one bedroom, or it was a one bed suite.
Right.
A very concerned look from a man at the front desk. And so you'll be needing the sheets for the pullout, right? Why add a right? ? Like, come on.
So crazy. Yeah. People just still.
And we were with Barb. Barb was checking us in. More on that on the Patreon episode. Bradley's mom. but yeah. I couldn't fully like give the attitude I normally do. Or I mean, I mean, people are all just trying their best, and I actually don't have to give anyone that much attitude. But
no, we'll need two pairs of sheets because I'm a squirter. Because my girlfriend makes me squirt. Okay,
can't take her anywhere, especially hotels. Know what I mean? Sheets, please.
Do you have plastic sheets, sir?
Yeah. Oh, does the sofa, is it lined with some plastic? Maybe we'll opt for that, the two of us, then. Great.
More on squirting in next week's episode. Mm-hmm. But hey, let's get to this week's episode. So excited about a friend of the pod. Today we are diking out with actor, singer, podcaster, and LGBTQ activist Nicole Payson about the relationship escalator. Many of you are familiar with Nicole from her podcast, Coming Out with Lauren and Nicole, that she co-hosts with past guest Lauren Flans, or from her role as Aster in the very popular web series Everyone But Me, or the various other roles that she's had on film and TV. So let's get into it.
Woo!
Thank you so much for diking out with us today. Finally, we did it. We made it happen.
We made it happen. Thank you for asking me. I'm so excited. When you emailed, I was like, yes, finally.
Yes. No, we've been wanting to have you on for a while now, and we met very briefly a few years back now at Klexicon.
Yep.
I think you were sitting in, this was right before you started your podcast, and you were sitting in on a podcasting panel that I was on with the Les Hangout folks, and then you started your podcast, and then I was a guest on the podcast, and I had the most fun doing your podcast.
We loved having you. Honestly,
I didn't want it to end. I was like, this is like the most refreshing podcast experience. It was just so much fun talking to you two. And
thanks.
Yeah,
we try to keep things very positive. Like, for those of you out there who don't know, hi, I'm Nicole Payson. I co-host Coming Out with Lauren and Nicole, aka Coming Out Pod. And we have queer people on telling their coming out stories. And then also, especially as of late, speaking on different issues that are relevant to the community at any given moment. We've gotten in, you know, we've waded more into the controversial waters since, like, it feels like there's a new controversy every day in our community.
You do such a good job at that. I love those episodes of your podcast. I usually follow up with Lauren because I feel like we're always like on Twitter at the same time. So yeah. I'll send her a DM and I'm like, wow, I wish I could talk about this topic as eloquently as you two, but you do such a great job of tackling these complicated issues that have a lot of sensitivities, I guess.
Sensitivity and nuance. Thank you.
Around.
Thank you so much for saying that. Yeah. And it makes sense that you would talk to Lauren versus me, as I am never on Twitter and basically don't know how to use it. So there we go. Thank you for saying that. I mean, I think I am a person who stands in the middle of a lot of issues. I feel like, I don't know, being bisexual and polyamorous and a lot of other like things put me in the middle and make me see things in a way that feels pretty nuanced. And I try very, very hard to be able to speak in a nuanced way about issues that people on the internet would like to look at in very black and white terms. I think it's important, especially right now with like the unbelievable amount of division, certainly within our country, but even within our community, you know.
Within our community, yeah.
Like it just can get so nasty and divisive. And I think that the internet loves to make things simple that are much more complicated, and likes to paint people with broad strokes, and that's just not how people are usually. So it's actually kind of a joy for me to talk about difficult topics that way, because it helps me to see things beyond my knee-jerk reaction to something. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Spoken like a real person who doesn't use Twitter. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I like in the couple times I've ever gone down like a Twitter rabbit hole, I just start feeling myself getting angrier and angrier. Mm-hmm. And like, I'll tweet like, and the couple times I've ever tweeted something that's like a little bit like meh, whatever, I regret it immediately. I'm like, oh, why did I do that? Like, you know. Anyway,
I know I try so hard to not be mean on Twitter. Today, I caught myself almost telling some homophobic guy to drive off a cliff.
And like, I get it, you know, like the feeling is there. I get that.
His thing was talking about how the gay agenda, the unnatural gay agenda, and in his profile pic, he has glasses. I'm like, why are you wearing those unnatural glasses? Obviously, God wanted you to have blurry vision and see the world. And I was going to say, obviously, God wants you to have blurry vision and drive off a cliff. Mm-hmm. But I stopped there and I'm like, no, be more positive. Just be snarky. Don't be mean.
That's very good. The number of times that I really have like done one of those where like, I'm like, don't take the extra step here in the way.
I know.
The thing is, because of course then like the point is lost. Then it just because that's
exactly
where it comes down. It's like, I don't know, for as difficult as this is and as cliche as it sounds, like I hear Michelle Obama in my head a lot being like, go high. Like, and I'm like, you know, if any family ever had to take the high road, it's them. Like, constantly. Right. And like, if they can do it, then like, I can hold myself to that standard. You know, I just hear, my conscience is Michelle Obama. There you go. That's
a good one. My tweet conscience is J-Lo instead. Going,
that's
let's
a great one
get
too.
Loud. Like, I can be very mean on Twitter, and that's why I avoid it.
Oh, my God.
For our listeners who aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit more about your background. You're an actor. You have a queer following. Tell us how that came about.
So I'm an actor, writer, host, and educator, so says my resume. I gained a following initially because of an early web series, I guess. Yeah, like literally at the advent of the web series. There was actually, when I graduated college, it was really cool because all the television writers decided to go on strike, like, immediately when I started auditioning. I was like, sweet. And we went into a recession. I was like, no jobs. Awesome.
Right.
But what came out of that was a bunch of television writers started writing for the web, which at that time was, like, the Wild West. Just nobody did that. They're like, a web series? I remember literally having to explain what a web series was to people. But I auditioned for Anyone But Me, and it was created and written by one of the writers of The L Word. And so, like, I saw L Word in the breakdown, and I was like, me, please pick me. And it just ended up taking off in a way that, like, we just caught lightning in a bottle. It was the right place at the right time. And it's a coming-of-age story of two teenage girls who fall in love, and I was one of those two girls. And it ended up lasting 3 seasons, plus, like, a bonus season, plus a bunch of the other stuff, and it's on Hulu now, if you guys want to check it out. But that is that's where I got my start, and then that catapulted me into, like, the queer media world. So I came out publicly. I'd come out, like, in my own life years before I was on that show, but I came out publicly as a result of that show, and then that just opened up doors to, like, acting in other queer projects, writing for some queer publications, like, doing panels, going to cons, like, all of it over the past decade plus. And I'm a professional queer. That's what I say. That's what I am.
Sounds like it.
That web series has such hardcore fans. A friend of mine, shout out to Erin, was freaking out after I did your podcast, and she's like, "Oh my god, you were like in a room with Nicole Paisley. Like, you were. Oh my god, I wouldn't be able to."
That's so amazing.
And she was just like gushing about the web series, and she's like, "Yeah."
That's so cool. Thank you. It was so special because there was almost nothing like it. The reason they chose me to audition was because I wrote an impassioned letter being like, I wish I had this growing up. Like, this would have made such a huge difference for me. And because there just wasn't anything with the exception of South of Nowhere to that point. And so...
Which I was watching.
Yeah. So we just, like... And the L Word also, the first iteration, had just ended. So there was, like, this gap in content. And we just, like, slid right on in there and got very lucky. It changed my life. It really, like, charted a course for my adult life and career in a way that I'm extremely grateful for. Yeah. It was awesome.
That's great.
Well, as a professional queer, we have to wonder... What is the gayest thing you did this week?
Oh, wow. I mean, I always do so many gay things that it's hard to know. Was it hosting my gay podcast yesterday or was it sneaking like a sexy moment with my girlfriend while we were like, we like positioned my child in his rocker in a way where he wasn't like looking directly at us.
Oh my God.
I was like, we have 15 minutes. Like, let's make this happen. Like, that probably was it. But it also might have been taking my girlfriend out for her birthday last night and being like an out queer couple for the first time at a restaurant in over a year. That felt very, very special, to be honest. That was fantastic. I was like, holy shit, it's been so long. So that was cool.
Gay amazing. That must have felt so nice.
Yeah, it felt it was just
and happy birthday to her.
Yes, happy birthday, Amanda.
Happy birthday.
Well, speaking of girlfriend and relationships and a baby and all that, we're going to be talking about relationship escalators today. And I'm so excited about this topic, even though when I was writing up the doc for this, I kept writing elevator.
Me too. Like, no. I say it all the time. If I exchange escalator for elevator in this conversation, which is almost inevitable, like, please forgive me. I mean escalator.
Yeah, because then you'd be talking about my relationship. That's I did a relationship
the
elevator.
Do the elevators.
Yes, right to the top. Like just
everyone else is on that escalator for sure. So for people who aren't familiar with the term, what is the relationship escalator?
So the relationship escalator is basically like the timeline that society puts you on and like the tick marks of the progression of a relationship, of like a traditional relationship, right? So like dating, then we're official, then we're, you know, we move in, get married, have kids. Like there are all these stops on your way to the top of the escalator, which is apparently, you know, the end of your life and dying like notebook style next to your partner, I guess. So that's the idea of it. And I'm just so interested in this topic because A, it's very relevant to certain questions that like I'm having in my own life. And I'm constantly questioning anyway how much of my assumptions about relationships and what I want and how I see the future are based on what I actually want or what I've been told to want or told to expect. And this is really a huge – this framework is just – it's as though we are predestined to go along with this, and anything outside of that feels like we have – we just have no idea how to handle that. It's the where is this going question. And if like there isn't an answer to that, it's a failed relationship apparently. I just am interested in really dissecting that and questioning whether that's a fact or that's an assumption that we make. So
yeah, I do think that over time, I guess, I mean, we're all kind of raised with this idea of a relationship escalator, unless you were born into a family that maybe your parents didn't follow that as much. But if they did, then it's like this very ingrained thing that's reinforced by media, by like TV shows, movies. It's reinforced by the government,
know. Sure is.
Right? Like tax benefits and all of that are like tied to these milestones.
Yeah.
And
you're literally incentivized to follow this path.
Yeah. To marry as I was kids. Doing my taxes at the last possible minute last night before the deadline, I was like, should we just get married?
No, for real. I mean, the fact that like we have a child now and get a tax credit, I was like, this is fantastic. fantastic. Like, we, like, I mean, but I, and it wasn't something that I had thought of, but when we got married, my husband and I, I'm confusing all of you out there who just heard about my girlfriend. But when my husband and I got married, like, that was one of the first things I thought of. I was like, ooh, taxes. Like, that.
Right,
that, and
right.
Like, and, like, he's an EU citizen. And I was like, ooh, EU citizenship. You know, like, ooh, like again, yeah, these, right. like, shiny objects of marriage, you know, of the relationship escalator. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. I had friends who they had a baby that was like due around New Year's, and I was like, ooh, if it's New Year's Eve, you can deduct it off last year's taxes.
Like that. Yeah.
It your asset.
Yeah. Exactly.
Melody, you were an asset, baby. You were born. Or so I screwed my parents over by waiting 8 hours into the new year to be born.
They're like, damn it. This is not starting well. No, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That wasn't really hammered in at home, having like immigrant parents, and just like I was in the middle of two cultures and didn't have anyone to follow. But it was really, it was media for me. I really learned all of this. Like when you said Notebook, boom. Like,
of course.
Rom-coms, yeah. Romance movies.
Oh, rom-coms for sure. I mean, every sitcom, you know, all the family-based ones, even ones that are a little bit more like, is it Step by Step?
Oh, where, yeah.
Where, that was like the modern Brady Bunch type
thing.
Because
they were divorced and they, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And even then, though, it's always presented as other.
Oh, yeah.
So even if there is representation of, you know, getting pregnant before you get married, it's like a conflict point, or it's a, oh, no, this is the thing about this character is they got pregnant before they got married.
The Achilles heel. Know?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It is the thing to overcome, you mm-hmm. know, versus right. just a different experience. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
As I got older, sometimes you just don't really think outside the box about this stuff mm-hmm. until I think you get more experience in life and you meet more people and you see more examples of relationships. But I remember there were always like a couple of moments for me that stood out. One was reading Amy Poehler's autobiography, where she talks about her divorce, and there's some quote in it about how she doesn't view her marriage as a failure just because she got divorced. And to me, that was just like this really radical way of thinking. She's like, hey, I got two kids out of it. Most of the marriage was great, and then it didn't work out. But that sounds like success to me. Like, what else is it, you
of
know?
Of course.
And that success is always defined by, that notebook.
The end
kind
goal
of
making right. it till death do us part. And like,
right.
it just, I don't know. With the Notebook thing, like I've referenced the Notebook in like what I also find myself wanting. Like I do want that. And then again, I go, well, and do I want that just because like that's what I've been told by all these things? Or do I really want that? Or what is it? And to give a little bit of background on me, Well, first of all, I'm poly, and I am married and have a girlfriend, and my girlfriend and I are coming up on 3 years together, and my husband and I are coming up on 7. And
you and your girlfriend, I didn't realize that you met on that stage at Clexico. When you posted that, what? I went and I watched I found the video of it because I'm like, hold on, this is too cute, and I'm going to be a creep, and I'm going to find this YouTube video of when Nicole and her girlfriend first connected, let's say.
We did. No, it was amazing, actually. First of all, also very, like, talk about stars aligning. Like, she was not even supposed to be on that panel. It was an LGBTQ actors panel at Clexicon 2018. And she wasn't supposed to be on it, but somebody dropped out last minute, and it was like the day before or whatever. And she someone asked her, and she was like, "Yeah, totally." And I rocked up to like the little holding area on the side of the stage, and I just I remember it was like yesterday. Like, she turned around. She was on the other side of this table, and she turned around, and I was like, "Holy shit, this person's hot!" I was like, "She's so hot." And she introduced herself, and she has an Australian accent. And I was like, oh, Jesus, God, like, what's happening? happening. And it was immediate. I was immediately like, oh no. And then we were on this panel together and we sat next to each other. And in the like latter half of the panel, they opened the floor up for questions. And someone immediately from the audience asked a mental health question and any of our experiences with that. And I sort of like shakily raised my hand and spoke about my sister who unfortunately took her own life on April 1st, 2015. And it was so interesting because Mandala, who again, I'd met 45 minutes earlier, just like grabbed my hand and held my hand while I spoke the entire time because I was shaking and getting emotional. And I thought that was so lovely. And then I actually...
Now I'm getting emotional. Yeah.
It was really amazing. And then she... after I finished, she asked to pass the mic, and it just so happened she immediately said her brother took his life as well, our only siblings. And it was just like, what are the odds of having sat next to each other on that panel again when she wasn't supposed to even be on it, when like, and it was just immediate, and like we were basically inseparable for the rest of the weekend as a result of all of that. And like, we did not hook up. She was, I found out later, dating somebody else at the time, but that relationship was coming to a close, on its own completely separately. And we were just friends for the next like 4 months or so. And then I was already married. Too. Yeah. And I had called my husband that day. He was actually living in China at the time. I was working in China, and I called him that day to be like, okay, so just met this girl and like, I don't know if anything's going to happen, but like, whoa. And I was like, are you cool if, you know, something happens? And he was like, does the Pope wear a funny hat? And I was like, all right, great, yay. And yeah, we have a very, very cool relationship. We basically just have to like, you know, say, hey, this is on my radar. You cool. Want to let you know, you know?
Yeah.
And we really don't like veto each other that way. It would have to be a really extenuating circumstance. It's just, but we are not a don't ask, don't tell situation. There's transparency with us. It's the way that we've wanted it from the very beginning. And yeah, we just don't, it's great. It's very transparent. And so, so he knew from square one that I liked her. And so finally, when like she came over for the first time, we weren't just like having coffee or a drink somewhere or whatever. And she came over to the house and I was like, I think it's going to happen tonight. Like I said to my husband, and he's like, cool, okay. So he'd been like prepped for months leading up to my girlfriend and I getting together. So, yeah. Anyway.
Wow. So I love that. Yeah. Because you mentioned, you know, the don't ask, don't tell. Yeah. There are so many different models for polyamory. Yeah. And that's great that you and your husband are on the same page as it, because it seems like a lot of people say, you know, polyamory doesn't work, but it's also like regular relationships don't work. And then also, like,
that's exactly
what does work. I don't know that they're not, those relationships don't work compared to however many failed
non-monogamous
relationships,
right?
There are, and it's, you know, whatever it comes down to, whether you're poly or monogamous, it's that you and your partner are on the same page about it and can communicate.
And have a common vocabulary. Yeah. Like I would recommend and have recommended to like anybody out there who's looking at exploring poly or even just like interested in kind of what it's about, even if you don't want to explore it for yourself, like pick up the books, The Ethical Slut, More Than Two. Let's see. There are some others that are eluding me at the moment, but The Ethical Slut is like the Bible of polyamory, basically. But I would say that was fundamental for us when we first started exploring all of this, because I went into my relationship with my husband knowing I was poly already. Like that had been an exploration for me for 2 years leading up to getting together with him. So then finally, when like he and I decided, okay, it's time to like actually have a conversation about how this will work. It was about 6 months into the relationship and we decided to read The Ethical Slut together so that we would have a common vocabulary and discuss potential things that would come up and the agreements that we had. So I highly recommend that. But like going back to something though that you said about, you know, well, poly relationships don't work out, and like a lot of monogamous relationships don't work out either. Like the other part of my background here is that my parents got separated and then subsequently divorced when I was 11, and they got back together 15 years later. And they were – and they are not married. They are – they had no desire to get remarried, but they have been living together for the past decade. Really always had, like, a very unique divorce situation anyway in that they were friends. And we even did some family vacations still together and stuff, and they would just sleep in, like, separate rooms or whatever. And so my friends would always be like, are your parents going to get back together or whatever? And I was like, no. They don't want to do that. They were dating other people. It was like, whatever. And then they finally did. At a time in their life where, like, their companionship meant more than whatever they maybe had been seeking otherwise. And they'd also been through a lot with my sister, and I know that that was a big bonding point for them that only really they can relate to together, too. And it their situation and some of the people they chose to date and things, like, at first, as like an angsty teenager, I got kind of like fucked up over it, where I was like, I don't know what to believe about relationships, you know, like, I got like mad at times.
I was going to ask, yeah. When did it start, you questioning?
In high school, really. Like, yeah. I was like, what even is, you know, like, what am I supposed to believe about how relationships are supposed to really function? And, like, is it a failure if I get divorced? Because it feels like, and it's like, I never want to get divorced. I don't ever want to do that. You know, it was sort of a pushback against that, but also a recognition that, wait a second, I don't want to get married unless I really think this is going to go the distance, which was another thing for me. But in terms of poly stuff, I call it my second coming out, and it there was a lot of stuff that led up to it that was really conflated with my bisexuality in a way that actually delayed my coming out as poly, because I was trying desperately to be, like, the non-stereotypical bisexual.
Aren't we all? Yeah,
the idea, exactly, where you're like, I will not fall into this stereotype of being promiscuous or wanting to be with more than one person at the same time. Or, like, like, I was boxing myself in so much, even though, like, you know, and then I'd fuck up, right, in a relationship. Like, I cheated on my girlfriend in college, who I was, like, desperately in love with. And it was one of those, that was an aha moment for me, because I had to really, because it was not what everybody said. It wasn't what, like, where people are like, if you cheat, then you can't, you're not really in love with the person. And I was like,
yeah,
but I am. So, like, what does this mean? You know, and it certainly means that I need to have more integrity around relationships, definitely. But beyond that, like, when I get past just admonishing myself for having broken the agreement that we had in that relationship, the clouds sort of parted and I was like, oh, shit, I wouldn't have done this with another girl. And I was like, oh, no, like, that's a terrible thing to realize. And I was like, I have to fucking say that to her. And it's just going to, like, it, like, she's going to hate. She's a lesbian, too. So I was like, this is just the worst. She's probably going to end the relationship just based on that, because now I'm the bisexual that she can't trust and all this stuff. And somehow, like, we did actually manage to work through it, which is another lesson and one that I've learned over and over again with poly, which is actually just be honest, even when you're most scared to do it, because people are much more responsive to trying to make things work if they know that you're being honest with them. What it is that you want and what it is that you're feeling. And so, like, that was a moment for me, but I still didn't have poly language. At that point, I was like, I'll just watch some straight porn, which I hate anyway. But I was like, I was like, when I feel an urge, I'll just watch straight porn and that'll take care of it. Like, it's okay. It's fine. And now you know I'm doing that. So it's like, it's fine. And, like,
that reminds me of an old listener question of a woman who's married to a man, and her therapist was like, well, just watch lesbian porn. Because she was feeling like that she wasn't able to, like, express her queerness, and her therapist, like, just watch lesbian porn. And she's like, what?
You're like, that's not, that to me is just, it's mind boggling that a therapist would say something like that. Yeah. And look, and like I've said it a million times on my own podcast, and I'll say it again here, like, not all bisexuals are polyamorous. Not all bisexuals are polyamorous. They are, it is, they, people get, conflate those two things. They complement each other, I'm not going to lie, but they're not the same thing. And I know bisexual people who are very happy in monogamous relationships and would be desperately unhappy in poly ones. So like it is a separate thing, but I know for me, I am both those things. And I didn't have the language, and it wasn't until like my late 20s, of course, when I was part of a theater company, because theater kids are crazy.
Oh, I know. I'm dating a theater kid.
Is it right? I mean, we do have the best parties, I'm not going to lie. But like, but it's a very like, it's usually a very like sexually free and experimental sort of community of people. And someone brought up poly and the ethical slut. And I was like, I'm sorry, what now? Like, what? And it was completely mind blowing. I was like this. And at that point I was single and I was dating around, and I was at any given time dating 2 to 3 people. Usually within 2 years, I usually was dating 2 to 3 people at the same time. And like everybody knew about each other. It was fine, because there wasn't any like any exclusivity, quote unquote. But it was then that I was like, oh, now this makes sense. Like now I know why I have very significant feelings for this person and this person, and neither of them are canceling each other out. Like I'm always told they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that was, and then again, later I met my husband, and that was when I started like being like, all right, how does this work in like real life? In like a relationship? How does this work? So, yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
When you'd mentioned that you had, when you cheated on that girlfriend and you're like, oh no, I broke that agreement.
Yeah.
I just realized, I mean, how many people are actually having a formal agreement who are doing the traditional relationship escalator? I wonder like how moving forward as like things get more queer and polyamorous and there's more information about it, like are people who are monogamous going to be like, okay, let's talk about how we are going to be monogamous in the same way that polyamory or polyamorous people have those conversations? Because I'm thinking back on relationships that have been monogamous and there never really was a formal agreement. It was just like, you're my girlfriend, like I'm your girlfriend, you know, and that's it. And it's a lot of mystery there.
It's ambiguous. It's asking to be exclusive, but then like, what does that mean? It makes me think of that conversation in the last season of the original L Word when they were talking about like what cheating was, and they're like, "Oh, thinking is cheating."
Oh yeah,
I fucking hate that. Like that shit is so poisonous. Like the idea that like being a human is cheating. Like you know what I mean? Like having human thoughts and impulses is cheating. Like even if you never act on them, you're like. What?
Yeah. Right. Bette Porter is a villain. Like, yeah. Right.
Oh my God. I know.
But it was like, wow. Like, I didn't even think that. It didn't even occur to me that people have different definitions as to what cheating is. I'm like, is that why my ex-girlfriend cheated all the time? Did she just not think that, you know, kissing was cheating? And I definitely thought kissing was cheating.
Well, that's so interesting that you bring that up because that has been an actual conversation in my poly relationship. It's like my husband and girlfriend just tend to take kissing more seriously than I do. And it's and like we have established that like one must again, give the heads up before one does anything, kissing included. And I agree with that because it's important to them, you know, like because I know that it matters to them and they need that. And it's really not a big concession for me to make. So I do that. That said, like for my core, I don't know, like pre-COVID, I would like to me going out and like dancing and then like, I make out with someone on the dance floor. Like that to me does not equate to something that feels like it needs to be reported or certainly would fall into cheating. But I recognize that's not the case with everybody. And I respect that. And then that's what that comes down to, right? Is like when it comes to agreements, it's going over like where are you at in terms of your assumptions about what is cheating? When would you feel betrayed? What are things that you need from me and that I can freely agree to? And where is that line for me where I say, okay, that isn't practically going to work for me, so where can we find a middle ground? And then also, when do we come back to the drawing board in a year and say, do we still adhere? Are these agreements still working, or are we finding that we need to amend some of them because some of them work better than others? You know, so that's like that's a big. I mean, I literally did this. That was essentially the process with my marriage vows too, because people have asked me. Speaking of the relationship escalator, right? So this is part of it, right? So I've gotten asked a lot of times, and recently on my podcast. If poly, why marriage? Why would I get married? And that makes total sense to me. And I think like marriage, the actual commitment, first of all, means very different things to a lot of different people, and can literally just mean a legal agreement in a lot of ways that's beneficial for health insurance. I mean, truly, like I know people that are married for that reason, who are in relationships but got married really only for the health insurance and otherwise would have not done it. So like, you know, it's everything from that to like, I'm desperately in love with you and I want the cookie cutter everything until death do us part. Like it is all of those things. And for some people it's spiritual and some people it's not. It's, I think we need to like walk back the idea that there is one type of marriage too. That marriage means one thing. And with my husband and I, first of all, we got married by a pastor who is like a dear friend of ours and actually also was close with my sister and performed her memorial service. So like he really is very close with our family and knows a lot of what we've been through. And he's gay too. So he knew going into marrying us that we were poly. You know, and it's not like he had any like moral objections to that. So it was, was great. And then for me, we actually followed kind of this book that we found that was actually a monogamous model, that was being put forth, but we thought was really great about creating vows based on a series of conversations that we had about what we genuinely felt that we could promise one another. And we took notes throughout and then our vows were based on very specific things that we agreed to. And I don't mean like setting up poly agreements, like in front of our family being like, okay, as long as you like call me first, it's fine. Like we were not standing at our wedding ceremony
and
saying,
Nicole, promise to call your husband and give him a heads up when you meet a hot Australian.
Exactly. No tongue kissing.
Yeah, exactly. No getting, drinking is not an excuse, you know, like, no, no, it was not that. It was more a general, than that, but took into account, you know, we even said like in our vows, and if this doesn't last forever, we promise to always be friends and be loving toward one another and respectful toward one
another.
That's
so gay, Nicole.
That's a good vow.
That's so gay.
That's the gay. It is really good. He's a great ally.
No, that's great.
Yeah. I think a lot of straight nuclear family, married people who go on to have children should incorporate that vow.
This is
like, for the sake of the children, that should be like a across the board vow.
Sure.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. And that's that. And I really hats off to my parents for like giving such a wonderful example of that and of that being a possibility where like they, of course, had their issues, you know, and they still do. They're two people in a relationship. It happens. But they really did such a good job of being friendly and loving. And there was never a question that they loved and respected each other ever. You know, and to me, I look at it and I'm like that again, that's a mark of success. That is success is even if one iteration of your relationship meets its like end point, right? Where you're like, this version of our relationship is coming to a close, a necessary close, and we now have to evolve into whatever the next iteration is, that's still success. It's just evolution. And, you know, I do believe, I brought up a book before, More Than Two. And one of the things that was so informative about reading that was something you said, Melody, about like thinking about any relationship as a set of agreements, right?
Right. Yeah.
And in the beginning of More Than Two, they talk an enormous amount about consent and consent in any relationship and how when you enter into it, if you start hiding things, whatever, big or small, like the other person can't consent then. Like you're taking away their ability to consent if you're not saying what you're thinking and feeling and wanting. Like, because then they can't consent to the same things that you want or whatever it is. Like, they really, like, it made me think about consent in a very different way. And I kept thinking, like, I want all of my monogamous friends to read this, too, because this is just true of all relationships. And, like, I don't know. There are so many complications with poly. Like, it is not for the faint of heart. I'm not gonna lie. but at the same time, the, like, level of communication and like radical honesty that is required is something that I would recommend for anybody in any type of relationship.
For any relationship. Yeah. And when you talk about your parents being a model for it, and I'm thinking of some friends I know who I remember I was visiting a friend in California and went to dinner with her stepdad and the stepdad's ex-wife and like all the stepkids together. And this is like a regular monthly dinner that they have. And like the current wife and the stepwife get along great. And it was such like a beautiful, happy, healthy thing to see. And I think the reason or something that would help us achieve more of that as a society is having these conversations about what to expect about the relationship and kind of maybe, I don't know, is it weird to kind of establish like at what point does this relationship end? Mm-hmm. Like at what point, what does a bad relationship for you and me look like? And what's the point that we need to reevaluate so we can see it? If we talk about it when we're healthy and things are well, then maybe we can recognize it when we're there and work on it. Because I feel like a lot of that pain and that bitterness is because people have a really different understanding. I mean, even me as a divorced person, you know, I don't talk to my ex-wife and we don't have kids, so we don't need to. But for anybody who's been listening to this podcast from the start, clearly I was very bitter in the beginning. Clearly I had some unresolved anger around it. And it's because I also wanted the marriage to end. I just thought I couldn't.
Yeah.
I just thought I made this promise. And even though I'm not happy in this relationship, I've got to suck it up and stick with it and make the best of it. And like,
there's no stops on an escalator, you know?
Yeah.
There's nowhere to get off.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you're right. Fucked if you try right. to jump. I mean, I yeah. don't know. Like, it's not a good thing.
No, totally.
I've seen people fall on escalators. It's
pretty,
very scary.
Yeah, it's not pretty at all. Your clothes get stuck in the thing. It's like, it's bad. But like, yeah, I mean, that's such a good point. Like, we hold ourselves to this end up with standard. So like even that phrase I've thought about so many times, like, do you think you'll end up together? And you're like, wow, what does that mean? Well, like, that precludes so many things. Like, that means that, again, we're going to die at the same time. Like, just simply yeah. thinking, like, we go into right. these things being like, well, we're definitely going to die in the same moment. So, like, it's fine. Like we, because people
notebook
think.
Notebook style, I'm telling you.
Notebook style. Like, they're like, I don't want to die alone. And you're like, how many old people die with their partner? Many people right. pass away. Like, one partner passes away before the other. Sorry. Like, that's how that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like generally 50% of old people die alone. I don't know. Like, and I say alone, there are more people than just your partner, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you,
right,
you potentially
right.
have created a family, or if not, you have a chosen family, or you have a, like, there are other people outside of partner that could prevent you from, quote unquote, dying alone. So there is that.
Right. It reminds me of a joke that I used to tell after I got divorced. And I was like, you know, at first I was beating myself up, but then I'm like, it's better than the other option, which is death. Like, there's two ways for a marriage to end. And I guess it's good that neither one of us died. So, like, yay, divorce.
That's a fantastic way of putting it.
Like, I'm sure everyone in our lives are happy that we got divorced sure. and not one of us died. And that's how the marriage ended.
Yes.
So is it so bad?
And like, I, you know, in having a conversation with my girlfriend about the relationship escalator the other day, because someone, a poly person that I follow, posted about it, and it got me like really thinking about it again. And it's relevant to conversations that we're having in our relationship, just because of literal steps that are happening. Like, just I just had a baby 4 months ago, and figuring out what the three of us and our dynamic is with the kid, and the massive life shift that is having a child. You know, it is one of the things on the elevator or the escalator. There we go. You know, so
right,
like,
right.
yeah. So we're having conversations around that, and we don't live together at this point. She still has her own apartment, though. She spends a lot of time at our house. And then of course I'm able to go over there much less than I was before, because now there's the baby and it's just shifting things. And the question of like, okay, well, what does the future look like around all this is pertinent once again. You know, it's like we'll get comfortable
right.
in a certain groove, and then something happens that begs the question of where is this going? Where is this going? Where is this going? And am I wasting my time? Are we wasting our time? What is the point at which we say, you know, shit or get off the pot? But also, what does that mean? Does that mean another marriage ceremony, like, of some sort that obviously wouldn't be able to be legal but would be spiritual? Or does that, or do we not need that? Or do you start dating somebody else? And then is our relationship more of a secondary kind of situation? Or are we keeping it more of a co-primary? Like, what? Like, bleh! It's like all these, there's always, even in a poly relationship, there is still the escalator, and
right.
it is making all of us question, like, is the point of a relationship to make it to the end of the escalator, or can the point be intensity of joy? And
right.
if it's intensity of joy, that is so much more present. And that's not to say that relationships don't have hard times and that you don't want to weather hard times with people. I'm not talking about cutting and running as soon as things get tough. Like, right. That's not what I mean. But to your point, Carolyn, like, is there a point at which we say this is no longer serving each of us as it was in the beginning? And so maybe we call it a day and evolve into a friendship or whatever feels right for us, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
When you brought up this topic of the escalator, I'd been thinking about it because, and Melody, you're going to like this one. I've been watching Real Housewives of New York. And this one woman on the show, Carol, she's a widow. And she never got married. She wasn't married for that long. And she didn't remarry or anything after he passed away. And in the seasons I'm watching, she's in her 50s. He's in his late 20s at this point. And she's so casual about it and keeps saying that she doesn't, like, when he's basically living with her, she's like, oh, we're just shacking up. It's not we're living together. And she talks about not wanting to have these conversations around where is this going, because she's like, why? I'm enjoying it. He's enjoying it. We're happy. We're in this functioning relationship. I don't want to ask those questions of where is it going. And then her friends are like kind of putting this pressure on
her. It frustrates them.
Yeah, and they're like, well, why don't you want to commit? Or like, maybe there's something wrong with you. Maybe you need to discuss this in therapy. And then the interesting part that just got revealed was they showed her hanging out with his parents, and it's like the mom wants grandchildren, and like Carol's, you know, too old to produce, I guess they could adopt, but and he wants to have kids, and she's like, so I don't really know what this means for us, because I know he wants to have kids and I can't get pregnant, and I don't see that as being something necessarily for me, but I'm like, we're both really happy right now, so what is that? And I was like, what? That's a great question. What is that? Why isn't there any room for people to be in a relationship where the escalator isn't a thing? I know one person that I've met who's been in a relationship for 30 years. I don't know if it's an open relationship or not, but they live in separate apartments. They don't have kids, and they've been together for 30 years, not married, and they're very much in love, and they're, you know, there for each other for all the important moments. And when I got divorced, I was like, this is the most beautiful model of a relationship for me. And my now wife knows him too. And we were both talking about how much we admired him. We're like, yeah, we're never getting married again.
yeah.
Like, what a beautiful model just to like be with somebody because they like bring you joy and not have any expectations and not have to feel like you have to move in with each other. Yeah. Like, maybe that's why their relationship is successful, because they don't live together.
Yeah. No, I think, you know? First of all, one of my friend's mothers and her stepfather have that exact kind of thing. They've been together for years, and they live in separate cities even. One lives in LA, yeah, and the other one lives in San Francisco, and that's what they do. And they were at a point in their lives when they got together that's what they wanted, and it works. And like, who's to say that that's invalid, or that needs to go to a different, like it needs to elevate somehow, you know? Like, it doesn't,
right?
I don't know. I think, like, I am somebody who benefits a lot from having my own space. Like, I really do. And when I feel like someone is too in my space, I start to push back. Yeah, I put, like...
Well, tell that baby to back off, okay?
I know, right? That's the one person I can't tell that to. And that's the agreement that I made when I decided to have him. So there we go. But, like, anyway, from a relationship standpoint, you know? And, like, right. if I'm able to miss somebody a little, it helps the relationship. And as long as that model benefits the person that I'm with, it's great. If it doesn't, then that's when there are issues. And, like, I function something like that. But I think stepping back a little, and I don't know, something you said jogged this for me. I do want to say, like, I don't want to like shit on the escalator. I don't want to shit on the escalator in general. But like,
hard to clean up. Yeah.
That feels very unfortunate on so many levels. But like, I don't, you know, for people where that's comfortable, who, potentially even me, considering I'm on it to some extent in one of my two relationships, like I also completely get the feeling of security that comes with the assumption of the next step. And like that, somebody saying to you, yes, my intention is to be with you forever. Like, and I, regardless of the number of things that can happen, death, divorce, et cetera, that get in the way of that intention and may throw it off, like, I understand the feeling of security there. And on a very practical level, like we're saying, there are legal securities and stuff. And I think, like, we often forget because, again, like, marriage has really evolved actually enormously, certainly this century, it's not the 20th century, the last century, the 20th mm-hmm. century. Think about how much a marriage evolved from the beginning of the 20th century to the end.
And just women's rights.
With women's rights. Yeah. Like, marriage on so many, like, as an institution was created for the purpose of security. Like, mm-hmm. women got married right. to be taken care of. That was the model. So, like, what's interesting and why I think that we need to question these institutions for ourselves and decide consciously what we want in relationships and consciously come to agreements are because we are taking a model that was created for economic reasons and applying it to love and romance and assuming that it was created only for love and romance. And it's not. I mean, it can be, but like, we need to recognize what this was from the very beginning and then say, what is it that I really want? You know?
That just made me think of, I had a conversation with an old coworker of mine who I think was struggling in his marriage, and he was a very simple guy from Buffalo who seemed like he didn't express himself much but felt like he could open up to me. And he's like, sometimes I think about when marriage became a thing, people only lived until they were like 25.
Exactly.
And yeah, now we're expected to spend 60 years with somebody. Are you kidding me? Right? He was feeling like really stuck there. And then it's also, you know, the institution of marriage and the role of religion and the role of patriarchy and the role of control. So I think for us as queer identifying people, it feels like we should be more prone to not feel obligated to follow this escalator. Yet, when gay marriage was legalized, you know, I was like, yep, I'm on it. Like, and
yeah. There's also a scarcity mindset, like with queer people. It's like you find one and you latch. It's harder. I mean, statistically, it's very much smaller part of the population.
Sure.
So
oh, for sure.
I understand that impulse to cling onto someone.
And it's also like it is. I mean, part of why we were able to sell the straights on gay marriage was because we were like, we're just like you. It's a different gender. That's all. Like, we're adopting a heteronormative model so that you don't think we're too weird. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think I've said many times that I feel like that was I understand why that, you know, movements need to evolve and all these things evolve over time and it's just natural and it makes sense. And we, much like the straights, were also given all of these models in media to follow. So, like, we were, for lack of a better word, brainwashed into thinking this was the only option too, you know. But like,
yeah, I would have never thought to have a kid before getting married.
No!
Unless marriage was never legalized for gay people. And I don't know if it was, I mean, partly the media, partly my religious upbringing. But even then, Melody, I think we got an email, a pitch about something, and it was for something queer. And they used the term having a child out of wedlock.
Yeah,
and I was like, what the fuck? Yeah, I'm like, who talks like a child out of wedlock? What is this, the 70s? Like...
An again, like wed. I just breaking it down because I'm a word nerd. But like wedlock. Think about
lock.
That too.
Yeah.
The other thing, because we're talking about like religion and all the things that play into this. The other part of this too is, you know, marriage and the escalator are very cultural as well, and like are looked at in many cultures as the preservation of that culture. I mean, right. You know, like with I have Indian friends whose parents absolutely want them only to marry Indian people and have Indian children, and it continue the culture. And same with Jewish friends, you know, like yes, it's hugely ingrained in like our tribalism too, in a way, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even on that show, Indian Matchmaker, obviously that was the whole point, marrying off strangers. But there was a girl who was that had Guyanese blood, and she was the hardest to find a match for because you just have to preserve the culture through marriage.
Oy. Yeah, because I mean, and it's the way to. It's the way people see you doing it. I don't know. It's I don't see this changing anytime soon, but I do love. I love that we're all starting to, like, in our the generations coming up, actively questioning this stuff. I sit with the question all the time of, like, how do I, as the married person in my – I'm what's known as, like, in the position of the hinge of the V of the relationship that I'm in. So my husband is, like, one end of the V and my girlfriend is the other, and I'm the only meeting point as they are platonic friends. I am their only like partner that way, romantically and sexually. And so I am constantly asking myself as the person who is on this escalator, like on the one hand, how do I provide a sense of security to the other partner who has not been on this escalator? Obviously we've had the evolution of our relationship that's followed certain pretty traditional, you know, steps and whatever. But like, again, we don't live together. Marriage really isn't an option for us except in a ceremonial context. What does all this mean? How do I provide a sense of security? And can I provide a sense of security? Or does that have to come from her? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was curious about that too, because it does seem clearly like one relationship is a clear escalator.
Yeah. And it's like it causes really it like, you know, without breaking any like, you know, confidentiality or anything with my partners, you know, it causes a lot of conversations. Yeah. It definitely, because I think what so much of it comes down to is who do you give your time and energy to, and how is time and energy divided as a resource, more than even a commitment of marriage, more than even a living together. What is the exact amount of time, and what is that the quality of that time that means that someone feels equal to another partner, you know, or feels secure? And that's something that is constantly talked about, because like frankly I spend my husband and I were just talking about this. I spend more time with my girlfriend than my husband, actual alone time. And part of that is because she and I have jobs that are not 9-to-5 jobs, or mm-hmm. 9-to-7 as his job is. You know, so he's tied to his computer 5 days a week from 9-to-7. And like she and I are much more flexible. There are reasons that she and I actually end up spending more time alone together than he and I. But she has her own place. And I go to bed next to him almost every night. And so there's a qualitative difference that she feels in that. So then how do you negotiate that? And I don't have an answer for that because I'm currently negotiating it. So like it really does make you think about how to be extremely intentional with the time that you do spend with partners.
Yeah.
You know, which again is, I think, important in no matter what relationship is
in
being
relationship,
super
right.
intentional, because like you can, you know, we all came out of a pandemic where we're like probably with our partners 24/7 and just like watching Netflix. But you're like, I feel like I haven't been on a date with you in a year, you know, like that.
Just had that conversation.
Oh, for sure.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, that.
2 days ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, my wife and I, we moved into a house, and even though now we're like more removed from the city and our friends and everything, she was feeling neglected because now I have my own office space and I'm just shut in here to do work, where before we had to kind of like navigate around each other a lot more. And now I'm just like sequestered in a room doing work all the time. And like, she had to get a hamster. She's the hinge. She's the hinge in the relationship between the hamster and I don't interact.
Ah, that's fantastic.
I'll look at her.
Oh, my God.
But yeah, I mean, I think, like, if I had to pick a through line for this conversation, it would probably be, like, whether you're going to be on or off the escalator, it's about being intentional about that. You know, like not taking for granted that you're on or off it, or that's your destiny, or that's just the way it is. You know,
being
intentional with your time and your agreements.
Being intentional and also being conscious. Conscious is a word you've used a few times. Mm-hmm. And I just think a lot of these conversations are kicking off relatively not so long ago, you know, and evolving because there is a shift in consciousness. Like, we will only get better. There will be even more healthy polyamorous relationships. Like, it's just not, it hasn't been talked about or thought about consciously. So I love that. Yeah. Consciousness, conscious and intentional seem to be the key words.
Oh my God. Yeah.
With this.
Which again are really important for any relationship. Regardless,
right,
like
right.
I'm not, true. And I'm never a person that's going to peddle polyamory. Like, I really think that is, like anything else in relationships, just so individual and something that is going to work for some people and not going to work for others. And like, that is all very, very okay. And like, it is also motherfucking exhausting. So like, you, you really, really have to want it. That's the other. The other part of it. Like, and that's the thing about the escalator too, is that you can coast on some level, you know, like, which is not great because it's the opposite of intentional. It causes its problems, but there's so much, life throws so much shit at you that you're like, well, if I just get on this escalator, it's at least one thing I don't have to worry about, you know, like, and that I get too. That I really get too.
That's actually part of it for me. I've always been this serial monogamous, but part of it, it's like I feel like I need to have that part of my life settled.
Totally.
Or else I feel like too many things are spiraling. Like when I'm single, my mind goes to places I don't want or need it to go. And I feel like mentally I'm a lot better of a person when I have that stability in my love life. But then going back to the question you brought up earlier, it's like, why do I want these things? Why do I want marriage? Why do I feel like I need to have this settled? Is it because of this escalator being pushed on me, or do I really want that? And it can be difficult sometimes to know what the answer is. And maybe you don't have to know what the answer is.
No, it's okay. Like,
maybe if you could just be present.
Maybe if we could just be present, like, full stop. You know, I mean, just in, like, all of life. Maybe if we could just be present.
It'd make a big diff, I think.
Yes. Well, I mean,
everybody do mushrooms.
Right.
Oh my God, I haven't.
That's what every conversation lately comes down to.
I haven't. I never have, because I'm a little bit of a control freak, and so I fear that I would not fare very well on them, or that. But I'm open to it. The circumstances around it just have to be so fucking perfect, and I have to know someone's babysitting me, and then I'll do it.
Another quick thing I was thinking about when we were talking about like these models that you have and where do these pressures come from is Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's relationship, which I thought was so interesting because they weren't married and they were having these kids and growing the family, and then it was the kids, so they say, that were pressuring them to get married.
Oh, really?
And then they got married, and then
it just went to shit, and now they have the messiest divorce ever, apparently.
Right, yeah. Right. And yeah. It's like, you know, they don't know the details of their relationship, but it's funny that you think like, oh, well, things are changing in the younger generations and whatever. But it's like, where did these kids get the idea that they were begging their parents to be married? Was it just like the other kids in school? Was it TV? I don't. Have you seen any great representation of people being happily off the escalator
in media
and having it not be weird? Yeah, in media or
like scripted
in life. I mean,
or
I
real?
Guess there's like either. I mean, like Susan Sarandon, I guess, is one that.
Are Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn married, or are they? I don't know if they're married, but I agree. Susan Sarandon.
They recently broke up, or like a couple years ago now.
They broke up,
but
yeah.
After 25 years, that's a successful relationship. Oh my God, yes,
right.
Obviously, I mean, like again, my parents currently are. They'll refer to each other as husband and wife. It's funny. I hear it all the time. Like when they're talking to someone at a hotel, or whether, you know, making reservations, or they're like whatever it is, because it's just easier, like, and right. Because that's what they were for a long time, you know. But like, they are decidedly not married, and they have separate expenses too. They keep they're separate. Like, they both had separate careers, and all that's still separate. And so, like, I mean, my parents are doing it. It's hard. I see it more from a younger generation in like Europe. Like, this is one of the things that's cool about my husband. He's Swedish born and very like culturally Swedish in a lot of ways. And you know, many of his friends are not married and they have kids. And so like that's very common in Sweden.
I notice it in France too. My cousins who have kids, none of them are married and they have mm-hmm. kids and they've been with their partners for a while. Yep. And I also have a French family friend, same thing. She's been with her boyfriend forever. Like, I can't remember when she wasn't with him, and she has two kids with him and they're not married. And I'm like, that's so interesting that do they just not have.
It's not, I mean, pressure. It's not as puritanical a society, and which so much of the differences between America and Europe, like, really come down to, you know. And we talked about the emphasis of religion on marriage and the ways in which even people who would consider themselves agnostic or atheist are much more, have much more religious-based ideas about marriage than they think. Because it's so ingrained in our culture that like you can't even really parse it out. So I think that that's a big difference too, because like Sweden for sure is much more of like an agnostic society than we are. And I think that's true of not all of Europe by any means, but some of Europe to be sure.
We got to wrap this up. Any final thoughts on the escalator? I mean, we've covered a lot of it.
I do want to say, I know I said this earlier, but I'll say it again. I do not want anybody to think that I'm judging anybody who is on the escalator.
Oh, for
sure. And also I don't want anybody to think that I'm a hypocrite, because I am clearly on it on some level. So like I wrestle with this stuff all the time precisely because I find myself wanting like all of these traditional things while also being a very non-traditional person. And so then it causes me to be like, holy shit, I'm queer and polyamorous and in this type of very atypical relationship. And still I have these ideas. Where are these ideas coming from? And are they what I really want? And so like, that's for me, I'm just in a constant state of like, of questioning of this stuff. And it's not a casting judgment on any of it. It's really.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think the takeaway is mostly we're having this conversation so people are more aware of it. Cause usually it's something that like when you're on an escalator, once you step on, you're not really thinking about it until.
Exactly.
You get off of it,
yeah.
Or when you're looking for the next one, I don't know. Yeah. And I think a lot of the problems that we have are tied to these these expectations and not really understanding how we feel about them, where they come from, and are we on the same page as the people that we love about them? Yes. So thank you so much for coming and sharing so much about your life and being vulnerable. We really appreciate that.
Thank you, I think
people will really enjoy that. How can people follow you online? I mean, they know how to listen. If you're listening to Dyking Out, you know how to listen to Nicole's podcast, okay?
It's pretty easy. You can find the podcast at Coming Out Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And it's on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all of those things, but listed as Coming Out with Lauren and Nicole. It's confusing, and I wish I could rebrand, but we can't. We've been around for 3 years. So that's how you find the podcast. I am at Nicole Payson. Payent on Instagram and kind of Twitter. I'm there sometimes. You're going to find me much more on Instagram. And also, I do post poly stuff on Instagram with increasing regularity. So you will also see that if you want to, poke around and find out some stuff. I've done a bunch of panels on it, too, some of which are on my Instagram. Others you can just, look up. But yeah, I talk about this a lot because it's a huge part of my life. And otherwise, is there anywhere else you can find me on the internet? Not yet. I used to have a website. I don't do that anymore. It's too much work.
We all have a defunct website up.
Right? I feel weird asking this question after the year plus that we've had, but do you have any upcoming projects that you want to plug?
You know what?
I feel like that's a mean question to ask.
Any
creative person.
Actually, yes, there's one that I can't talk about. I can't plug it yet because it's about to shoot. But it is.
So you're on the next season of The L Word, Gen Q.
No, but I was a consultant for them for this season. So that's a fun little fact. I was doing some behind the scenes. I'm also a writer. So that's something that people don't know about me. But I was a consultant
for
the L Word.
Awesome.
So watch L Word Generation Q. There is one storyline in there specifically on which I consulted quite a bit. So that definitely watch
Amazing.
That. next thing I would say is, I'm about to shoot something, not as an actor. I actually co-wrote a 10-episode digital series that's coming up with the co-creator of Red, the series out of Brazil. So this is a bilingual, cross-cultural new series that we are coming out with and just shooting this summer. And I am the co-writer of it, so that's very exciting.
Amazing.
So I will keep everybody posted on that when it actually comes out. Oh yeah, next month for Pride Month, this has not been announced yet, but via OML and Reverie, they are featuring me as a Pride trailblazer, and I have five of my short films that I've been in over the past couple of years being featured for 24 hours streaming. I don't know the day yet. So again, if you follow me, I will release that information. But I'm very excited because some of these have not been released, seen by anybody outside of festivals yet. So if you want to see me act in five very different projects, you will be able to on OML and Reverie in June for Pride.
That's so cool. Congrats.
Thank you.
That's awesome. It was so great catching up with you, Nicole. Thanks so much for diking out with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye, guys. Yay.
It was so nice to catch up with Nicole. I have so much fun diking out with other podcasters.
I've heard about her for so long now since joining this podcast. And you were right. The coolest.
Let's get to our listener question.
All right. Ooh, this one looks juicy. I've recently met someone I believe to be my person. Yesterday, we talked about the strong energy we feel with one another, and she told me she doesn't have the room to explore that now that she's in a quote-unquote complicated relationship with her girlfriend, but she doesn't want that to build distance between her and I either. With anyone else, I'd have backed off in a heartbeat, but I don't feel like giving up just yet. I'm afraid of being yet again an afterthought. Any tips on how to establish healthy boundaries and still be willing to give love a chance? Well, that's a fitting question for this episode, Curlin.
Yeah, I'm going to say back off. Go away.
I know, same.
Shut it down. Oh,
should have known we would both have that practical advice.
Right. I don't know what you are going to set yourself up to be an afterthought or whatever. You can't give this person their cake and let them eat it too. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't like that saying though. That's a whole other thing.
That I know. And
every time I say, I'm like, if you have cake, you should be able to eat it.
Every time I say, I think of that iconic scene where they unpack that phrase in the Mary-Kate and Ashley straight to video movie Holiday in the Sun.
Well, I have not seen that, but I am on board. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
This person has a complicated relationship with her girlfriend. It doesn't sound that complicated if she has a girlfriend and she's telling you that even though she feels that you have strong energy, that she can't explore it. So back away. Nothing makes somebody thirstier for you than not wanting them.
Yeah.
Ignore them. Go away. I'm not into game playing, but if you really want this person to make a decision, don't hang around and give them the milk for free.
You tried your cake saying, and then you thought you tried out the milk one.
Yeah. It's really. Look, we did. We did another guest interview right before this. We recorded our Patreon ep. I'm at the end of my rope.
Yeah.
I'm pulling phrases from early childhood that my grandma taught me. All right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where we are with this listener question. But am I wrong?
You're right. You're right about this. Back off. Sometimes we just throw the word complicated at others to get them to stop asking questions. And look, it works. You're already like, sure, maybe it is complicated. What relationship isn't, honestly?
Right.
But this, you've already put it out in the universe. I'm just afraid of being yet again an afterthought. You kind of know what's going to happen here.
Yeah. This person, if they want to, if there's a strong energy with you, if there's a connection, then they have to either make a decision to pursue that. Whatever the relationship is with this other person, it's like either they're in it with this girlfriend or they're not, but they are telling you that they don't have room to explore anything with you.
Yeah.
So
don't set yourself up for heartbreak. Get out while you're still thinking clear enough to, you know, have a little foresight about how maybe this could end up. Is that too harsh?
No.
No. Get on Lex.
Yeah.
Write a fun little ditty and get back out there. Or
there are other energies out there.
Yeah. Oh, so many energies. It's about to be the horniest summer of our lives, people. If you're feeling iffy about someone, you know you're going to dive into an active dating pool. I know a lot of us live in maybe smaller towns or don't have a lot of the community spaces that they would like to have in their cities. But Lex is there. We've reinvented dating over the last year and a half. People are there and looking for connections, too.
And I can't say this enough, and people can't hear it enough, that if somebody tells you that they're not going to make themselves available to you, run. Run. They're telling you that to kind of give them an excuse, almost, to be a selfish asshole.
Right.
Right? They're like, oh, because I said it, then now I can kind of use you and play with your emotions because I was upfront about it and you knew what you were getting into and it's not my fault. Like that.
I mean, I've been guilty
doing.
Of it. Maybe,
run away.
Maybe that's why I'm like, this ain't good, because I've done this to ward off, you know, to not have complicated conversations and to just keep on keeping on my destructive path. Like, I've been on the other side, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Move on. You'll be better off for it. And
protect your heart.
The whole my person, there's a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a question for us, you can send it to dykingout@gmail.com and we will give it to you straight and dirty.
Straight, no chaser.
You can follow us on social media at Dyking Out Everywhere and Dyking Out Pod on TikTok, which maybe I'll go on to flirt with Rosie O'Donnell. I don't know.
Okay, here's your assignment.
Okay.
We've probably had about 50 episodes now where we've plugged an inactive TikTok. Let's trade off. I did the last one. Okay. The bare minimum. I Googled Aubrey Plaza on a TikTok. Okay. Why don't you make a TikTok for next week?
I'm going to make a TikTok in P-Town. How about that?
There you go.
Great.
Great.
Cool. I'm doing it.
Do it. Do it. And then we'll work on a Rosie O'Donnell one. We can devote our whole account to her. And we could do whatever we want with it.
Yeah, I'm going to do duets with Rosie O'Donnell until I get a restraining order.
Duet her duets.
Follow me at TGI Carolyn. By the time you're listening to this, I'm still in P-Town, I think, for one more day. So I've got things up on my stories.
Oh, hell yeah.
Living it up.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali.
And thank you so much for spending your time with us.
The pleasure's been mine. I'm going to get ready to pack for Texas, so we'll see y'all next Tuesday.
Hey!
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.